Mini episode 1841 of the FTH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FTH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1841. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you. We're breaking down the 2025 NBA Finals today. We are reviewing it, and we're going to start this on a very, very special note. Right now, you're just looking at me at FDH Mission Control on the north coast of America. I'm going to bring up a graphic here that I'm going to add to the screen here, because we have FDH Hoops analyst Ben Chu joining us in a moment here, and I'm going to explain why we have the graphic up that we do. That's his backdrop, which he'll be sitting in front of uno momento. Ben is now 11-0 on the show. He and I, for the last 11 years, we have previewed the NBA Finals. We've made our picks. Mine have been 8-3, by the way. I mean, I've done darn good over a period of time, most would say, I think. But Ben is unblemished. He is 11-0, and this one took a chunk out of his soul, I know, because as a Seattle Supersonics fan, watching this, I'm sure, was akin to when I watched the Baltimore Ravens lift the Super Bowl trophy a couple of times since leaving Cleveland. So I get that. I know where he's coming from. And again, you probably saw, if you were watching the video of it, my wide-eyed, bug-eyed panic when I thought he was on the verge of picking Indiana somewhat out of spite on our preview here. And he did say instead Oklahoma City would win in seven. He, even on that, he was closer than me. I said they'd win in six. And it was a great finals. We're going to look back on this. We're going to break it down. And more importantly, I think we're going to kind of see where everything goes from here, because the league was already looking ahead to next season even before the finals were done. The weekend of Game 7 saw a lot of heated player movement, and it has only sort of continued from here. These are the kind of things that are not allowed to happen in other sports, by the way. Roger Goodell does not allow anybody to step on the Super Bowl. Now, nobody in his sport, right? He can't control things outside of the sport. The Luka Doncic trade last year stepped on the Super Bowl, but Roger Goodell couldn't do anything about that. But he's generally very good at controlling the flow of news as regards the NFL during Super Bowl week. So we're going to be taking a look a little bit ahead here as well as back at the NBA Finals. But Ben, I'm sure, can hear me from his perch in Portland here. He'll be coming back into view here. Now that we've had a chance to let the 11-0 marinate on camera, unmolested by your presence, you are back on screen with us here.
To be fair, I wasn't a couple of those shots, Rick. But
yeah, exactly.
As we know, like, I know you have a big wrestling fan. The champ is here. Here we
go. 11-0. I mean, that's the whole thing here, too. And again, I do want to get the word out near and far on what this accomplishment has been. And this is one of these occasions where, again, to honor the achievement here, I have on my shirt that has a whole bunch of flames on it. So I not only have the flames right above my head for anybody that's watching on the video here, I've got the flames on my shirt, 11-0. It is quite an accomplishment. The three times where you and I differed over the years, 2019 was the hardest one to get right. You picked Toronto. You were way out on a limb. I had the worst of both worlds. I swallowed my bile and picked Golden State, and I lost on that one anyways. It was a little bit of a split decision with the public, I think, in 2021. I picked Milwaukee. I picked Phoenix. You picked Milwaukee. Yeah, the Freudian slip there. So you were right on that one. I was wrong with Phoenix. 2022 was another sort of split decision with the public. We were both on Golden State in that one correctly. And I was incorrect in 2024. I just thought Luka and Dallas was going to ride it all the way. I went with the thing. Generally speaking, the in the NBA, not always, but the team with the best player, and I still rank Luka over Jason Tatum, and that's even before Tatum's injury. Mm-hmm. I thought that might be enough. I thought they might ride the miracle run that Indiana almost rode this year. I was wrong on that. We were both right on Oklahoma City, and as I said before you came into shot here, that was one where, again, I realized that, you know, in quest of the 11-0, you had to make a big, deep swallow on this one here and take the team, the franchise that had left the area where you were rooting for them. They were the Seattle Supersonics, of course, but you did it. You did the right thing. You made the call that was correct, 11-0, and everyone at FDH, we cannot congratulate you enough.
Well, I appreciate you, Rick, and, you know, obviously, as we know, it's a tough call, but perfection, you know, you need to make tough calls when you're perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no margin of error for these things here. And, you know, you even picked it in seven games. And I was expecting to be vindicated when Oklahoma City won game five. They end up laying a giant egg in game six. And so it goes to game seven. And one of the things here, I kind of tease this off here. One of the reasons I think it was so hard for them to put away Indiana, even after Halliburton tragically went down in game seven, is that, again, whilst being a 68-win team, whilst being a team that over the last 2 years had put together a dominant one seed of a franchise in the Western Conference both years, this year making it to the NBA Finals, the youth of the team, just it is very, very unusual in basketball history when you look at this. And I tried to go back the last couple of decades to see here. And ironically, there's one guy on the court that might have thought that this looked a little bit familiar. And that might have been Pascal Siakam. You could look at that and say the 2019 Toronto Raptors. But then again, it's not only Kawhi Leonard. Probably the second best player on the team was Kyle Lowry. So I think right. We have to throw that team out of there. Ananobi was not yet an important part of the team. Siakam was starting to become that. But I don't think we could say that Toronto necessarily qualifies as a team where, gee, you know, if you look at their three best players, they may all still be getting better. I don't know if that's the case with SGA. I certainly think it's the case with Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren, that they're still continuing to get better. SGA himself may still find another level, but the other two guys definitely will. You go back even further, and I'm sorry, what's your thought on that?
No. Sorry, Rick. I thought that was an intro to something else.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, and we're going to see, too, especially with their, you know, it's a very rare situation in today's NBA where we have three of the top players on a championship team all coming up for either a supermax or a rookie extension. And that's going to be a really interesting narrative to see, because we know, at least from prior narrative with the Thunder, Clay Bennett doesn't like to spend money. So,
right.
Again, and we all know, too, they have a plethora of draft picks. This should not be surprising to anyone. But at the end of the day, we have to know, too, that there is a scenario for them to continue this run. And the real question is going to be is that who are going to be the players that are going to be part of this team in years two, year three, year four, year five?
Well, the one part of this that's not very promising, if you look at history, although I think the history that I'm going to cite has nothing to do with this, because I truly think that you're looking at some other events that were kind of coming into play as far as why this other team wasn't successful in sustaining their run. But we had talked about this off air. You and I had gotten into this, and you had indicated that you thought you knew where I was going with this, and we'll see. But the last team, I would say, where most of, if not all of, the key players, and on this team there was a player that wasn't still on the upward growth of his career. But if you go back, and unsurprisingly, this would be some distance in time, and that being because, again, unsurprisingly to us all, most teams that have won titles, the nucleuses have been kind of familiar to us, and it's because they've kind of congealed, grown together over time. So you tell me, if you really do know this, what's the team that I'm about to bring up, the last team, I would say, that probably had a core that was still in the youthful ascendancy when they won the championship?
I mean, I know you well enough, Rick. It's either something Ohio-based, but I use this rule like we've seen, like, in terms
it's not of the Cavs.
OKC team, they are super young. And the last time, if I know anything, because I'm based in Portland, that's the Portland Trailblazers in the early 75, 76 season after they won their first title. One of the youngest teams in NBA history to win a championship.
Okay. All right. They were pretty young, but I was going to say 2 years later. Ironically, some would say the franchise forerunners here, and officially in the NBA history books, they are the 1979 Seattle Supersonics. Yep. Mm-hmm. Looking at Basketball Reference here, the respective age of some of the players here. If you look at the top scorers going down in order, Gus Williams, 25 years old, Fred Brown, 30. There's your token exception to the rule here. But Joe Hassett, 23 years old. Lonnie Shelton, 23. Dennis Johnson, 24. He would go on to have a further final success. Anyways, Tom Lagarde, 23. Jackie Robinson, 23. And Jack Sikma, 23. So that's one of those things where, again, it just watching them in the 80s come up short against the Lakers. I think they made it as far as a Western Conference final at the time. I think I was too young and impressionable to realize that this was a team, because just in watching it in the 80s, you got brainwashed into thinking that the Lakers were the end-all, be-all in the conference. Once in a while, Houston would get through. But it's one of those things where you look at what they had, and not all of these guys stayed with them the whole time. But, boy, you look at this and you think it should have been a little more neck and neck between them and the Lakers during the 80s, and it's a tribute to how great the Lakers were.
Right, and we also saw, too, like in that timeline for the 80s, is that we had one of the more flukier timelines in the Western Conference, where a very good Sonics team led by essentially Tom Chambers, Dale Ellis, and Xavier McDaniel make it to the NBA Finals. And it just not make it to the NBA Finals, but make it to the Western Conference Finals being a seventh seed.
Yeah.
And it's a crazy scenario if you really truly think about it.
It is, and it's very ironic that this ends up being the team that kind of comes to mind, but as I was going back through the history, it does seem like it's the youngest nucleus to win a title since the 79 Sonics, which I was joking with you, of course, that I was just waiting for there to be one person in a Sonics jersey in the crowd with a sign that said, I've been waiting for this since 1979. But this is one of those things where, again, I know it didn't go down well in Seattle watching this play out, but it was really quite an NBA Finals. I mean, right at the outset, Indiana doing what they had done previously with that huge comeback win to take game one in a game where they couldn't have looked worse for most of the game. I mean, it was a laugher for most of the game. And just the way that they came back, that is one of those things where, again, it kind of set the tone that, like, even when Oklahoma City was doing well, it didn't seem like they were ever really truly in control. And it's one of those things, I know you and I had joked a little bit about the asterisk of this, but like in the second half of game seven, as they're pulling away, it just, and again, I'm not somebody that comes at this from the aspect of any kind of haterade towards Oklahoma City myself, but I just couldn't help but feel like there is a little bit of an asterisk there, because, again, like if Halliburton was in there, they certainly would have been blowing them out. And that's where, again, they were down 1 point at the half when Halliburton was already gone for the night. So it's like how it would have played out in another universe, but you go back another year. We have seen this in recent years here. I mean, Boston didn't face anybody healthy until the NBA Finals last year against Dallas, and then they end up drawing a Dallas team that wasn't as deep as some of the other teams that could have come out of the West. Oklahoma City, that might have given them a little bit of a better battle a year ago. Denver, potentially Minnesota. It just happened to be a Dallas team that was kind of top-heavy that got hot and a little bit lucky, let's be honest, at the right time. P.J. Washington hitting all the corner threes when he was wide open. Shades of Michael Petras in 2009, I hate to say. But, I'll take that to my grave. But it's one of those things where, again, Indiana, as much as I didn't take them seriously as far as having a chance to win this coming in, I said Oklahoma City in six. My impulse was to say in five. But Indiana really made a believer out of me. And it's one of those things where, again, I was already looking ahead next year to what I thought was going to be a two-horse race, the Cavs and the Pacers in the East. And this great rivalry that was starting to develop is basically over before it started. I mean, it resumes potentially the year after. But the way that the finals ended, it's one of those things where, again, the finals ended up being sort of just almost a pit stop to the start of the 25-26 season. It seems like we were gearing up for that even before Game 7 started.
Right, and again, I want to be honest in this narrative. I have my own views on these things, but I would also note, too, is that Oklahoma City deserves all their flowers, period.
Sure.
They won a game seven at home, as we all know in the world of the NBA Finals. Game seven is the toughest game to win.
Yep.
And I cannot disrespect them. And they, the one thing that I was impressed with in the third and going into the fourth quarter is that Mark Diagno clearly settled his team down at half and said, look, this is a close game. We are better than they are at this point with no Haliburton. So he was able to guide them toward the end. But I, again, it's a point you brought up, and I've seen this too. Colin Cowherd was mentioning this too, and a couple of other NBA insiders are like, how impressive is this title? And I like to use the rule out of courtesy, Rick. I hate that because if you win an NBA title, you win an NBA title. The road to the championship should not matter as much. But I've also seen similar scenarios where people are trumpeting up this team as one of the greatest of all times. And I'm like, you also have to be honest. Like, they went to a game seven against a four seed without their best player. That's just,
yeah,
it is what it is. And then again, I like to say to it, you're not discounting the championship. It's just more
right.
Like, you also have to be realistic. Would I say, like, this team is better than the 95-96 Bulls? No. Is this team better than the Lakers team that went 15-1 in the playoffs? No. Let's just be honest. And I feel like, too, and this is the best thing I can say for Thunder fans, this is their first title. Their runway is so long at this point, and because it is so long, that will change over time. We saw it with San Antonio. Like, a lot of people thought that 1999 championship against the Knicks was a fluke. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw them win title after title after title after that.
Yeah. And there is the scenario of where it gets better from here, certainly, because, again, a lot of the things that we're saying about this team this year and getting lucky with the Haliburton injury in Game 7, if you go back exactly 10 years, then you would be saying the exact same thing about the first go-round for Golden State when they faced a Cavs team without Kevin Love and after Game 1 of the NBA Finals, no Kyrie Irving, and yet the Cavs at one point were up 2-1 in the series. And I remember my good friend, FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway, was going to Game 4, and I said to him, I said, you are watching the deciding game of the series tonight. Because I said, you know, I said, if Kerr stays in the Soma coma, because he'd been slow to make changes and whatever, I said, if they get up 3-1, we will take one of the next three. I said, but if they snap out of it tonight, we're getting steamrolled. And I was afraid that's what was going to happen. And it did happen. We lost Game 4. Games 5 and 6 weren't particularly close. So it's one of those things where we look back on it now. Oh, look at what Golden State did from 2015 to 2019. You forget how lucky they were the first go-round, and it got better from there. Now, I don't see Oklahoma City being able to stack the deck with Kevin Durant or anybody like that based on their cap situation going in. But you know what? They may not need it because I will just say, too, and there was a very – and I don't remember who the columnist was on CBS Sports. It was a very overwrought column, I do believe, after Game 5 where Jalen Williams was being compared – effusively to Scottie Pippen, and he's definitely the best number two option in the league
also,
right now.
Can we get the level of disrespect to Scottie Pippen?
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of prisoner of the moment stuff going on. I saw that you engaged with somebody on Twitter that was saying that SGA is now hands down better than Steve Nash, best Canadian player of all time, which
Rick, I want to put this on the record. Apparently, Western Conference MVPs matter now.
Taking that into consideration. Well, yeah, the first and again, one ever.
And I'm just going to pick it up from that, too. It's like,
yeah,
that comment was not disrespecting SGA at all.
No,
it's just,
get it.
I feel like we as human beings are prisoners of the moment and want to trump it up. And I say this, too, out of elite courtesy to Oklahoma City. And this is me coming out as a Sonics fan saying is that this is a fantastic young team. Right?
Sure it is.
They are a great team.
Yeah.
And there should be no disrespect for this championship period for them.
Sure.
They did run into a scenario where they got a little lucky, but we've all seen in the history of the NBA, sometimes when you need to win an NBA Finals and win a championship, luck plays a factor. Let's just be honest. That's just how it is.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, and let's be honest here, too. I mean, if you want to play the old sliding doors game here, I mean, Oklahoma City, it's unclear in the end whether they got lucky or unlucky in drawing the hand that they drew with Indiana, because you look at it, and again, Indiana took them to seven games, and if Halliburton had stayed healthy, who knows on that. But again, it's going to come off as me being a bitter North Coast guy bringing up this point. But again, Indiana, again, they deserve to win that series with the Cavs. They did. They played great. They surprised me. They surprised the world. But when you're looking at a situation where, again, the three best players on a team have three good legs between them by the end of the series, you know, Garland was so bad that he's going to have toe surgery and be out the first part of next year. So it's like, again, had it been Oklahoma City and Cleveland, I mean, I think that would have been an all-time classic finals. I think Oklahoma City probably still would have been favored, but it's one of those things where, again, they were playing an Indiana team that was unlucky in Game 7, but they were also the beneficiary of some luck in getting to that point.
Yeah.
And again, and some will say also too, well, what if Indiana had had to play Boston if Tatum hadn't gotten hurt? I throw that out the window because Tatum got hurt after Boston was already cooked. So yeah. That wasn't – they were about to go down 3-1. It didn't matter. The Tatum thing was irrelevant, you know, to everything. Much like I think Thompson and Durant in 2019, if somebody wants to put an asterisk on Toronto, Toronto was going to win that series before those guys went down. So it's the timing of some of these things that really kind of matters. Halliburton getting hurt in Game 7 – will always make us wonder what would have happened the rest of the way. But then again, I think it's also fair to wonder if it was Indiana and Cleveland, heads up, health versus health in that series, who knows how that would have gone. It may very well still have been Indiana. This was the run of a lifetime, but also we'll never know what would have happened if they played a healthy Cavs team.
Right. And again, I'm going to just move away from the Cavs just for
sure.
All the other fans out there who follow the FDH Lounge.
Yes.
And the one thing I will say just out of courtesy to just to the Indiana Pacers, they had one of the most spectacular runs to an NBA Finals we have seen.
Yes.
In recent memory.
Yes.
We're not going to discount this. They literally took a team that was, by statistics, if you look at it, one of the top six teams in NBA history. Period.
Yeah.
And they took them to a seventh game.
Yeah.
And they had their best player off to a very hot start in that game.
Yes.
And again, I feel like the problem is coming into this is that the narrative right now is that OKC is a great team, but there's a lot of people who are like, well, I mean, they are who they are. They want a title. If it's their only one, that's cool, but are we really going to remember that down the line? And I feel like what happens is that a lot of the bigger media members are disrespecting Oklahoma City right now because this team is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I do not see in a scenario, at least in the short term, that this team's going to get worse. They're just going to get better. Let's just be honest. They had a top 10 draft pick in Nikola Topic who didn't play a single minute this year. And there were a lot of people talking him as the overall number one draft pick at one point last year.
Yeah.
So they're just going to get better. And the one thing I will say too, in terms of Oklahoma City, you got to give a lot of credit to Sam Presti. You have to. Like he learned a lot from the mistakes during the original Big Three era, Westbrook, Harden, and Durant.
Yep.
And he figured out like what the CBA was going to be in the future.
Yeah.
And I use this rule, the best thing you can do in any organizational scenario, the best thing you can do is just be prepared for what is to come.
Yep.
And he instantly figured out that, hey, the best thing I need to do is to accumulate as many draft picks as humanly possible.
Right.
Because we are projecting out a different NBA than what I'm existing in now.
Right.
But I will come out of courtesy, Rick. I do want to say this. And I know OKC fans are going to get on me for this. I'm prepared for this now. Here we go. Yeah. Battle tested, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot that I did hear comments from Aaron Wiggins during the championship event today. It's like, this is the, you know, like, this was supposedly the black hole of the NBA. I was like, guys, it's not the black hole of the NBA. Come on.
Right. Yeah.
That's in Sacramento.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, exactly. You know, in this team,
like, come on, guys. You guys were down for a couple of years, and you're back now.
Yeah, and this nonsense that they don't have an overwhelming chance of at least one more title, if not two, yeah, during this run. The nonsense about that, not, I apologize for getting dark here on everybody for a second, but the number one scenario where that doesn't happen is their team plane goes down in a cornfield. I mean, short of that, or like everybody, or everybody blows their own quads, you know, or you know, that's, you know, any of those freak type things. Short of that, even in a Western Conference that's going to be brutal. And by the way, you know, one final note there on the Cavs. I do believe they've officially awarded them the 2026 Eastern Conference Championship at this point. But Oklahoma City, look, unlike the Cavs, that's pretty much got a bye to the finals the way the league is shaping up, Oklahoma City is going to have to battle with a lot of other top squads. Okay. But guess what? They're all looking up at OKC, and deservedly so. OKC will be at least a decent favorite against whoever they go up against next year. Because again, the Western Conference Finals, that was one where I expected that to be a little bit more flop sweat on the part of Oklahoma City. And that's part of what made me surprised at the way, again, people will say, well, you shouldn't have been surprised, Rick. Look at how Indiana played. Yeah, but again, and I'll say this too, you know, you had the two 60-plus win teams here during the season. Well, they got the healthy 60-plus win team in the finals, and they got the team with the great defense, the historically great, yep, defense. I did not think Indiana would look against Oklahoma City the way they did against everybody else, and I was wrong about that. They did. And part of that was what Oklahoma City did to Minnesota. Because it was like, you watch them take apart Minnesota, and you think, who's going to stop these guys? So that is a tremendous – you know, insight there on just what Indiana achieved, getting as far as they got and getting to the point where, again, I do think it will be a what-if question from now until the end of time. Had Halliburton hung in there, had he not been at a point in time when he was compromised by it. But again, this is kind of shades of, I think, isn't this sort of similar to what happened with Klay Thompson in 2019, where he had the leg injury that kind of made him more susceptible here? There are certain things where when you're trying to battle through certain types of leg injuries, it will make you more susceptible to blowing out your Achilles. And again, so, I mean, I guess if I look at it that way, maybe it was only a question of, you know, of when it was going to happen to Halliburton, the fact that it happened in the first half. But it's one of those things where, again, I guess the what if would be, what if he doesn't get hurt in the first place? What happens with, yeah, Indiana? And again, it's a very persuasive thing.
He was off to a very hot start in that game. He had 9 points, three or four from three. So it could have been a different game. And I also feel like I do need to apologize to Sacramento King fans. I'm so sorry. I know you realize what I just said, but I'm like,
yeah. Hey, there it was.
They got no life. That's all I got to say at the end of the game.
They got no reason to be pissed. They're lucky they still have a team. That team probably should have gone to Seattle, you know, years ago as part of the whole thing here. But
just to jump back into it too, Rick, with just this finals, like, again, the big discussion leading up to all this was how were the ratings going to be. And we saw through six games, they were not good.
No.
They were along the lines of some of the worst ratings we've seen recently. And again, we can talk about, is it because the NBA did not promote Oklahoma City and Indiana enough during the regular season?
Yes.
Is it more just like, hey, you know, it's, you know, if there's no Curry, there's no LeBron, there's no Jason Tatum, there's no Boston, there's no Knicks. Is it a different world because of that? But what I would also like to know too is that, at least stylistically, this was a very good finals. And we saw, too, in a Game 7, it ranked up with some of the best ratings, I believe, since, like, the Cavs Game 7.
Yeah.
So, it was. And again, I also feel like, too, and this is a point I do want to make, is that I feel like, at least for a NBA Finals, where there's not a clear, distinct favorite, we are in the world of, like, if it goes to a Game 7, people will watch no matter what. And, you know, too, like when that game was played on Sunday, there was nothing else competing against it.
True. That is true.
Really nothing. There was no Stanley Cup. There was no major baseball games. There was no, you know, outside of maybe the FIFA World Cup team narrative. Like, there was nothing else on. Yeah. So, of course, it's going to get a great rating.
Right. Yeah, and it was the best since Game 6 of the 2019 NBA Finals. So you go from being in the 8s and 9s as far as millions went to 16.61 in Game 7, which, again, that's a little bit of the whole deal of that's a little bit of why March Madness always does so well, because anytime it's one and done, anytime it's a one game deal, it's always going to do that much better. And game sevens inherently are that. So you were able to bring a little bit of that whole thing to it. And then they were able to kind of reel in a bunch of people like, hey, whether or not you found this all interesting thus far, and a lot of the casuals didn't, it's a thing of like, hey, it's a chance to see who wins the championship in one game. So this is kind of, this is an object lesson right there for any kind of speculation. Cause I was curious to see, I'm like, okay, how much better is it going to do? It did significantly better. So it probably reeled in a whole bunch of the casuals and everything like that. But I will just say, again, the way that ABC covered it in the finals was indicative, really, of what the coverage had been the entire season. And I basically said to you that in terms of I'll let them off the hook for Indiana, because unless you had a crystal ball, you wouldn't have seen them coming. But as far as I always said, Oklahoma City and Cleveland, as far as the one seeds went, and they had that game, I think it was back in January, when it was the best record of two teams playing each other in a season since like 1972 at that time. So it's one of those things where, again, they want what they want. They want it to be you know, the networks want it to be the Celtics and the Lakers and the whatever. But as far as hedging themselves, as far as making a business calculation, because I always say I'm a student of the odds. And if you would have looked at those two teams at the time, you would have said overwhelmingly one of these two teams will be in the finals. They both could be, but one of them will be. And wouldn't you rather that you're not having to educate people on the fly about, hey, SGA stands for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You know, like it just, they put themselves in that box. And it just kept going throughout the finals, and it was just clear none of them took it seriously. I mean, for as much as everybody jumped on the whole thing about Stephen A. Smith is playing solitaire during the games, does it surprise anybody? Because this was a series that was largely bereft of narratives. And narratives are the fuel, they're the hydrogen fuel of ESPN and have been for 20-plus years now. So it's one of those things where when you condition your audience a certain way, when you spoon feed your audience that it's all about narratives, it's all about the storylines and everything like that, and all that you have in the end is great basketball to show people. We saw through the first six games, giving them great basketball when you've conditioned them to expect all the soap opera stuff, it ain't going to cut it.
Right, and we're also, just to note too, we're moving into a new media rights timeline, and we're going to have, yes, a lot more games on NBC. We're going to have a lot more games on Prime Video. And at least from what I've heard from both of the sources that I know within both of those organizations, they are at the point of trying to focus more on storytelling. And I feel like that is what is kind of missing right now. Like, and we saw during the NBA Finals, too, is like there was a whole discussion on social media about, well, there's no finals logo on the court. It literally looks like a regular season game. And because of that, a lot of people are missing that narrative. And again, too, like, I'm not going to say Adam Silver or the league should be like, it's a terrible scenario that they didn't do it. But you also have to realize that that's part of it at the end of the day. It's like, you want people to know. It's like, I saw there was an article produced at one point by someone who was working for, I think it was Bleacher Report, and the discussion was like the mid-season tournament, the in-season tournament had more recognizable court graphics.
Yes, by far.
Than the NBA Finals, and I was just like, it does make sense, and it's kind of surprising that this is the pinnacle of everything. And again, I know, especially, and I won't blame the league for this, is that at the end of the day, like, look, you want to make sure the playing surface is fine. You don't want anyone slipping or injuring themselves. But I feel like the pomp and circumstance surrounding the finals is kind of decreased because it could. Like, it was just something that wasn't as considered as much. And then, as we all know, the power of social media pushed them to do it more. And again, at the end of the day, too, it's like, does it matter as much? I'll be totally honest. It's the NBA Finals. I don't think that really changes anything at the end of the day. But if you are a fan who is just trying to watch a basketball game and you didn't know that was the NBA Finals, I don't blame anyone for getting confused at that point.
Yeah, and that's where, and again, and you, there have been echoes of this that have kind of played out previously as far as sports coverage goes. I go back to the early days of when Fox – had the exclusive network rights to MLB and when they were doing the World Series. And I remember seeing at the time that there had been like directives that had gone out, like, we're not going to talk about Babe Ruth or anybody. We don't want to take what's already a sport that skews old and cater to that. And so to where they were now, they got away from that clearly, because you can see broadcasts now where they'll sprinkle in the history as they should. I mean, you don't want to, if you have a historically illiterate audience, who's going to be watching baseball? But I just remember, too, and I remember ragging on my good friend, FDH Lounge dignitary Ron Glasnap, when he was working for a Fox Sports subsidiary at the time. And just that, like, those first couple of years of Fox having the World Series, when they would be playing, you know, like NBC, ABC, they would have sort of a more like orchestral music going into commercial, and Fox was just playing like classic rock stuff. And I just remember ragging on him, like, Why doesn't your company just change it to the Baseball Championship Series? Like, if you're going to suck all of the majesty out of it, why don't you just give it like a commonplace kind of a name? It's not really the World Series anymore. Some might say that was me overreacting to some of that. But there's a little bit of it here, too. I'll use the word demystifying. ABC, with their coverage, was actively demystifying the NBA Finals. They didn't take it seriously, and they didn't give any of the casuals a reason to take it seriously either. So it's only the hardcore hoops guys like me and you that were tuning in for each and every one of the games, and you saw how many of them there are in America, not nearly enough for them to make a good profit on it.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to pour this all on ESPN, Rick. I don't want to do that, because the NBA in recent memory has been setting themselves up for this scenario. And during the regular season, there was ample, and we will notice too, because they had ample opportunity to promote Oklahoma City. This is not a team that came out of nowhere like Indiana did during the regular
68 season. Wins.
They were the number one seed, Rick, following Western Conference timeline.
Yeah, 2 years
ago,
number
one
seed.
Should not be shocking to anyone, but again, like, I feel like I'll say this for the Oklahoma City fans, and because I feel like a bunch of them are being disrespected right now in this respect, is that they are not the most fun team to watch, but they are very methodical in what they do.
And
you have to respect that, because we've seen this in terms of greatness for some of the greatest teams in NBA history. If you can get the job done and you just win, that's really all that matters at the end of the day. Style points don't matter. No one's going to remember if your best player dunked on another guy.
Right.
They're only going to remember how many championships did you win at the end of the day.
Yeah, and there, you know, there was a lot on social media, too, of where people, as the playoffs went along, were kind of treating SGA kind of like Harden with his whole questionable ability to draw fouls. So there were people that were further sort of piling on Oklahoma City for that. But it's one of those things where, again, it was right in front of them there that, like, you had the opportunity to be promoting this team. And that, again, I get that the Cavs this year, because of Kenny Atkinson coming in and all the things were done different, the Cavs kind of came out of nowhere. But then again, you can look at it and say they were also in the much easier conference. So that's where I thought it was sort of a 50-50 thing on which of the teams was more likely to make it. If you're just looking at the fact that Oklahoma City, 68 wins, one of the greatest defenses of all time, but they had to go through a tougher field than the Cavs did. So, but either way, to look at it and say, you know, we're just going to hope neither of these teams makes it, which they made very clear was their strategy. Again, hope is not a strategy. And it's one of those things where, again, you and I, this is somewhat akin to the whole mini series we've done over the show. I think we'll be doing another one in the very near future on the streaming business. That you and I like to kind of take a look at that and see what's being done. You and I are fascinated by that. And I feel like we're talking in a bit of the same vein here, because we're looking at sort of the business of sports coverage here, and that it is malpractice to basically just sit there and cross your fingers that, gee, I hope big stars and big markets save us in the finals here. Am I going to sit here and tell you that the ratings would have been as much as 50% higher had they done what you and I thought that they should have? No, but they would have been somewhat higher. And at the end of the day, you're trying to get as much as you can out of every opportunity that you have. So kind of similar to when you and I are doing the draft coverage a little later this week here, too. You always have to try to make the most out of every piece of draft capital that you have, which Oklahoma City, to tie it all together, I guess, they did that. And that's the number one reason that they're the NBA champions.
Right. And I feel like, and again, I cannot blame ESPN or Turner at this point for trying to promote other teams. I get it, because if you look at the raw numbers for ratings, that's what you need to do. You need to put these up. But I also use the narrative that we look every single season when the NBA produces their national television schedule. We see this a lot. There's a lot of teams get overly weighted in terms of games. And we see this a lot because I would use the analogy with like ESPN and TNT. There was a timeline, at least for a couple of weeks during the regular season, where it was either the Lakers or the Clippers as the late game, no matter what. It didn't matter who was playing against them. It's just going to be the late game.
Yep.
And I think, and I feel like we're in a much different scenario than it used to be, like in the 90s going into the early 2000s, where a lot of people are now on social media much more. So they are more familiar with a lot of these guys. But I also understand that when you're trying to drive engagement, who are you going to drive engagement to? You're going to drive engagement to the players that people know, like Curry and LeBron, and you know, Jalen Brunson's had his ascent in this timeline too, so he's among that level at this time. And Tatum and Jalen Brown as well. But it's just a scenario that I'm very hopeful that both NBC and Prime Video are putting together these teams that are going to do a little bit better in trying to build these scenarios. And then we now know, Rick, there was a timeline, especially for ESPN, that they were essentially the elite level NBA hub, and now they're going to be challenged by two very hungry entities.
Yeah.
And if I've learned anything, when you're being challenged by two hungry entities, it's going to be a whole different scenario.
Yeah, and they're really throwing money around at both entities here, and it was just announced today as we're taping this that Grant Hill is going to be one of the analysts on NBC, and I didn't see any mention here of Dwayne Wade as far as the game analysts, but I think that's probably what they're going to end up using him as.
Yeah. I've also heard he could be doing studio at this time, but we'll see.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I saw that Reggie Miller is probably slated to be their lead analyst, which that just makes me stick my finger down my throat.
It's like Jamal Crawford's probably going to be in either one situations or two situations.
Yeah. So they're putting good teams together. Of course, again, you know, the $64,000 question is going to be, what are they getting in terms of what they're paying for with Michael Jordan? How big is he going to be in with their coverage? So they're doing a lot of things that make people sit up and take note on this. ESPN is going to have, in some form or fashion, inside the NBA being licensed to them by Turner Sports, which we'll have to see what that ends up looking like. But this is
a thing. Or Turner Sports even exists in 3 years. We'll see.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, who's going to look to potentially buy them once the networks of Warner Media are out on the ice flow that they're about to get sent out on. And, again, the whole scenario that those two networks are inheriting for next year, NBC and Prime Video, along with ESPN/ABC, the landscape was already being shaped over the weekend, even before one of the dominant things that has shaped the landscape in the last couple of days, the unfortunate injury of Tyrese Halliburton, probably relegating Indiana, I would say at this point, to being a play-in team next year, as opposed to the, you know, the one or the two or the three seed as they would have been otherwise. You have situations where Boston is consciously uncoupling right now from a couple of their guys. Porzingis, that happened not long before we hit air. And then, of course, a couple days ago, Drew Holiday. You have Kevin Durant going from Phoenix to Houston in a deal that's really kind of questionable as far as what Phoenix is getting back. Because of their stupid owner, they're having to work this straddle between, we still think we can contend for something. So they'll probably be like a 500 team and not go anywhere with basically what they have left with Beal and Booker and now, you know, the assets, Green coming to them from Houston. So there were already things that were happening, already things brewing. We have somewhat of a nothing burger deal today where McCollum and Poole were sort of the key players between New Orleans and Washington, neither of whom is relevant on this timeline. But that's the whole thing. Everything is now churning. It wasn't even waiting for Game 7 to be done here, and that part of it is with the NBA draft coming up, which, again, as we've announced, we are covering it live in real time. It'll be tomorrow as we're taping this, live on draft night, you and I giving the coverage here. But you've got that. You've got the start of free agency, the unofficial tampering period starting in a couple of days. So this entire compressed timeline that we're on, it already feels like we're into the whole 2025, 2026 deal. And it took until today for Oklahoma City to have their parade, but it felt anticlimactic because it feels like the rest of the world is moving on from the past season already.
Yeah, and again, that's just how the league is currently scheduled. And again, we're almost, if we're being honest, like we're taping this on the 24th right now.
Yeah.
We're literally just eight to 9 days away from summer league starting. So,
yeah, that too.
I mean, there's just so much going on in the league. And again, I do want to give the flowers to Oklahoma City. I do want to respect that team and a lot of that fan base who was I will give a lot of courtesy to them too. They are great fans in Oklahoma City. I do not want to disrespect them. They do love the Thunder.
Yeah.
And I would say too is that I'm really hopeful in their case that I don't think what the outcome is going to be. I'm really hopeful that, you know, they got a brand new arena that's going to be built around 2030, 2031, that with that infusion of capital, they're going to continue to build this roster so they have the opportunity to win more titles.
Mm-hmm.
But as we all know, it's going to be proven until otherwise at this timeline. So
that's right.
And again, and the really terrible part for them too is that they have a guy who's eligible for Supermax and then two guys who are eligible for their rookie extension. And that's just
sure
out of courtesy for any NBA champion in a CBA that's restrictive as this one is. It's not great. You're playing against the curve at that point.
Very much so. Yeah. I think what they have to do, you got to lock up your big three at this point. They've proven that they're your big three by dint of the fact that they now have rings. Of the three, I think it's Holmgren that still has the most growth ahead of him to kind of get to the level that we all thought he would get to. But, you know, he seems to be well on his way. And again, it took him mentioning this in the post-game interview here to even make you remember. He missed a good chunk of the season with a hip injury where you and I were just like, we're not even sure he should play the rest of the year, because it's like that's nothing to joke about as far as that goes. But, man, he came back and it was like nothing had ever happened in the first place. That's something where that could have been career threatening for a lot of people. A skinny guy like him, that could have been really, really, really bad. And yet it's something where it's almost a blip in our memory, because I remember at the time feeling, and it was one of those things. And again, we all tend to look at things through our fan prism. But I was just like, well, this probably makes it easier for the Cavs if he's done for the year or beyond. But it's like, but I don't want that. Nobody should ever want that. If you're an Oklahoma City fan that's happy that Halliburton went down, then shame on you. You don't deserve this title. You have to be the right kind of fan here. You have to, you know, respect the game enough to not want injuries, even if they would benefit your team. But it's one of those things where, again, I keep coming back to this, and that, again, people will point to, again, as haltingly as Oklahoma City played for a good part of the finals against Indiana and didn't really pull away until Halliburton was in there. To me, I think if you're looking for sort of the connective tissue of this story, it's the fact that, again, as we said early on here, I mean, you might have to go back to, ironically, the 79 Sonics to find a core as young as this one that won a title. I mean, Alex Caruso has a championship pedigree, but I mean, he is, what, their fifth or sixth most important player, perhaps? So it that doesn't really count.
Also know, too, Rick, like one of the guys that's being discussed right now and being talked about in terms of how are we going to replace him would be Isaiah Hartenstein, because he signed a multi-level extension for a lot of money, and at some point that's going to be called into question for sure.
Yeah, they're gonna, you and I have talked about this, and I think we'll talk about it a little bit more in the draft coverage tomorrow night. They're gonna have to replace him probably after this deal is up, because, and he's got two more years left on it, because that money is going to have to be apportioned other ways, because the depth of this roster has been,
and I need the analogy too, Rick, I feel like it's probably going to be sooner rather than
it might be. It very well might be. And that's where, again, but Oklahoma City having a chance to draft some things here, that's something to keep an eye on. You heard it here first. They are going to be looking, I'm sure, for big men in this year's draft. So it's one of those things where, yes, they didn't always look the part of a champion as far as the eye test goes in these finals. they didn't necessarily pass the eye test. I'm the first to say that. I'm a little critical of them in that respect. But it's so highly unusual that a team with a core that is still growing, and I think even SGA, I mean, I don't know that this is the best we've seen of him. I think it's possible he continues to grow at least a little bit from here. Williams, I'm sure of. Holmgren, I'm sure of. That's very unusual. We don't see this. You're generally more of a finished product by the time you win the title. So the fact that they didn't really pass the eye test, which I admit on the one hand, I'm trying to be fair on the other hand and say it is still highly unusual to win the title at this stage of your evolution. Because remember back in the 2023-2024 season, as they were making their way to the one seed, it was, and I think like you and I had picked them to do well that year. I was proud of myself. I picked them to make the conference finals. I don't know that anybody else necessarily did. I'm not saying that's my 11-0, but I did call that part of it, that tiny part of it. But we kind of kept waiting for like, okay, they're not going to be the one seed, right? Who's going to catch them? Who's going to catch them? And that was just the season before this one. Because like it was just like, oh, my God, are they going to come from nowhere and be the one seed? Which they did the previous year, and then they defended that this year. So it's like the notion of Oklahoma City being NBA champions would have been laughable not too long ago. I mean, if you go back to the most recent Iowa caucuses, say, for example, and somebody was to tell you that Oklahoma City will be the 2025 NBA champions, you'd want to give them a saliva test. So that's where, again, they deserve credit for this amount of growth and this amount of time. And again, I guess you're not always going to accrue all the style points that some other champions accrue if you do it at that stage of your youth and your evolution.
Well, I also use the rule too, Rick, is that style points are amazing and style points can lead you to these things. But at the end of the day, if you're a champion, you're still a champion. You'll be recognized no matter what you do at that point.
That's right. That's right. And this is a team that really proved itself throughout the season, coming through a brutal Western Conference. And again, I keep coming back to this. Very, very worthy foes. I would say if you look at the conference semifinals with Denver, where that went seven, and then the conference finals with Minnesota, where that was a gentleman's sweep. I mean, that was a thing where, again, Oklahoma City, I mean, if you want to look for style points anywhere, the Western Conference Finals is where you would find them. Mm-hmm. And potentially even the series against Denver, the champions from 2023, where they proved their mettle against a team that was more experienced and proven winners, which they were not yet at that point in time. So they proved a good amount on the way to the finals. So in terms of not having the style points in the finals that some people might have looked for, you know, again, there are allowances to be made here. But, right. Yeah, I think and that's the whole thing, too. And so I'm proud of our analysis with this because I think, again, we've acknowledged these things about Oklahoma City. There are things that you had to acknowledge as far as any kind of luck that they had or lack of style points in the finals, whatever. But in terms of the whole picture of this here, too, the fact that they were overcoming the youth and the inexperience that they had at this level is something to be saluted and something that's very rare, again, in the NBA.
Right, and it would not shock me in future years, Rick. We're going to see a lot of these younger teams win because the NBA right now is all about depth. And because you're all about depth, you're really just trying to put everything together and figure it out too. And again, we'll note this too. When you're a young team and you have a young head coach who has not a lot of playoff basketball experience, these things happen. Like you just have to accept that that's part of the narrative. And we will see. The real question is that we've seen in the last 7 years, it's been a different team winning the title. And I would say for the legacy of Oklahoma City, if you can get to two or three titles, a lot of people are going to remember you a lot more than you just won one because, again, one title is one title in today's NBA. We've seen seven different teams do it. So I feel like the proving ground is laid there for them moving forward. But the issue for them, too, and I hate to say it for them, is that they got a lot of teams ready to go in that conference in comparison to, like, I would use the analogy, if they were in the Eastern Conference,
yeah,
I feel like they'd have a better chance to get back to the finals.
Oh, if they were in the East, I'd put them down for 76 wins next year. But, you know, I mean, yeah, they got a lot of teams in the West that are going to be in their way and going to be causing them some problems. And, again, when you're talking about depth there, There is a piece called Depth is the New Hotness. It's in Pro Hoops Draftology 2025, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. Our guide to the 2025 NBA draft, which we will be covering in real time tomorrow night as we are recording this here with the NBA draft upcoming. So there's a lot to look forward to as far as the continued direction of the league. But before we bring this all the way around here, Ben, any remaining thoughts on this year's NBA Finals?
I mean, it's weird to say this, but a lot of the media heads are talking more about Indiana than they are talking about OKC right now.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a level of disrespect for OKC. They had a fantastic regular season, one of the best statistical regular seasons in NBA history. They deserve their flowers in this timeline. But again, the media is going to portray what the media wants to portray. But
yeah,
huge kudos to that team. They are... Again, as we all know, I have my own thoughts about Oklahoma City, but I have to give that team credit. SGA, Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, Mark Diagonal, that entire bench, including Isaiah Joe and Aaron Wiggins, were fantastic during the playoffs.
Yeah.
So you got to give them their flowers. If you win a title, you win a title. I feel like this is weird scenario where we're all saying, like, this finals championship doesn't matter as much. I'm like, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I'm calling it right now. It's dumb, Rick. You win a title. That is what it is.
Right. And also in that whole honor roll that you've got there, Lu Dort, one of the great on-ball defenders of the 21st century.
We're talking Caruso.
Einstein,
who made a great – again, who was a guy who was with the Knicks last season and found the right spot. And again, like, you have to give credit to the Thunder franchise and in terms of their player development. And again – back to those two words again we've been talking about for the last year and a half, Rick.
Yep.
If you have great player development, you have a great opportunity to get to an NBA Finals.
They're a huge success story. That's right. Oklahoma City is exemplifying, like you said, player development, which you and I have been talking about. And we've actually been on this, I'd say, as far back as 2020 when you had in the Final Four in the NBA, Denver and Miami. And that sort of prefaced what they would do the next couple of years. Denver eventually winning a title, Miami making it to another NBA Finals. But they were examples of teams that basically just sort of built players and did it the non-traditional way. Ironic in the case of Miami, completely the opposite of how they started the decade when they were the exemplification of the banana boat. But post-banana boat, Spoelstra, that it's ironic that you lose your best players that you've ever coached and your esteem only rises in basketball history, because it's only then that people have really seen the greatness of Eric Spoelstra and the whole thing with Heat culture, developing players, everything like that. Denver's been an example of that. San Antonio, going way back in the 21st century, they were sort of the originators of it. They were doing it when few other teams were doing it, and San Antonio has remained strong with that throughout history. Oklahoma City as well. Oklahoma City's been very strong in this regard.
I'm not surprised, Rick. Sam Presti came from that San Antonio Spurs lineage. So.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, and that's where, again, it's hit and miss who you hire from there. I mean, if you hire Danny Ferry and Mike Brown, you know, your mileage may vary, but some of the guys off of that tree, things have worked out well. And again, this is a thing where we've been talking about this a little bit more in that piece in our draft guide. Even talks about it more. The two teams with the best records in the league this year, Oklahoma City and Cleveland, the two teams in the finals, Oklahoma City and Indiana, both are all of them are success stories with depth and with trusting your bench, with going 10 deep a lot of times here. And that's something where, again, as we say in the piece, that the whole pace and space direction of the league demands it. And that's where, again, it's going to make it a little bit harder on a guy like Tom Thibodeau trying to get hired again, because you run into situations where the direction of the league kind of exposes where you are at as far as being a dinosaur, and you have to prove that you can adapt to that. Because his whole thing, like, I'm just going to ride these five guys into the ground. Well, when the pace is faster than it's ever been, their tongues are hanging out in the fourth quarter. So it's one of those things where, again, the direction of the league sort of demands that you have a deeper bench and that you trust it more. That's the whole thing too. Teams throughout history, none of these teams I'm talking about invented deep benches. There have been deep benches for a while. Coaches just haven't trusted them, and it's like, it's time for the playoffs. It's time to shrink it to eight or nine guys at the very most. That mentality is highly outdated, as you've seen this year.
Yeah, and we're going to see, especially going into a newer year of the NBA, is a lot of things are going to happen. Like, again, we have to, just because OKC is the favorite in the level of just in terms of who is more likely to be champion. But, I mean, we saw KD go to Houston. We saw a handful of teams in the East improve already.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to be in an area where a lot of these Western Conference teams have another year prepared for OKC. So, again, they should be the favorite. No one should doubt that. But I do feel like their road's going to be a little bit more difficult next season.
I would agree with that. And then we didn't even mention Bane going to Orlando, which was simultaneously an overpay and also exactly what Orlando needed. And something that I, as a Cavs fan, I'm not thrilled to see, because I think that's your Eastern Conference Finals right there next year, is Cavs and Orlando, based on the move that they made. I think they could use a little bit more of a true point guard as well. I think they may go in that direction in the draft. I will be very irate if they end up getting Walter Clayton, because I think he could just fit perfectly with that team. But again, that's the fun of getting to see what lies ahead. And again, these finals this year, differently than you see in some years, where the entire story of it is, you know, what is the culmination of a season. Like I said, this was the culmination of a season, and simultaneously with the moves already coming on the weekend of Game 7, the segue into the beginning of the 2025-2026 offseason, which is going to be, I think, one of the most active ones that we have seen in a long, long, long time. We will be here for a milestone of it in real time. The 2025 NBA draft. We'll be covering this on draft night, you and I, less than 24 hours from as we are taping this now. So I look forward to that, Ben. And as always, thank you for being here for this great coverage. And once again, congratulations on 11-0. You've successfully picked on this show the last 11 NBA champions when we did our finals previews.
Well, I appreciate it, Rick. Hopefully you can get to the magical number of 12-0 at some point. I'm getting close to the Dolphins, Rick. I'm getting
you are
to a perfect season at some point. So.
The perfect season. If you go 17-0, I'll have to send you my Marino throwback to wear. I know Marino didn't play for them, but maybe a Bob Greasy throwback.
If I get to 17-0, that's all you need to know.
That's right.
No discussion
That's right.
needs to be even brought up at this period.
That's right. That's right. Can we, Don Shula is not alive anymore, but maybe we could get one of his sons to make a guest appearance on the show to congratulate you and welcome you to the perfect club. Maybe Mercury Morris, if he has any relatives. Believe it or not, I'm not one of them. But so we could be looking at any number of luminaries from the 72 Dolphins saluting you. We're another 6 years out from that, but I wouldn't bet against you. 11-0. And again, just for what was a very, very entertaining NBA Finals, culminating in Ben Chu going in 11-0, who could ask for more than that? Thank you, Ben, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1841.